whether it's in business or politics, cinema or literature, whether it's in news, the events of the day, the events of the past, when we find ourselves at cathartic moments, we sometimes expect to hear something big. And how often do we walk away saying that we're underwhelmed, that it fell short of our expectations, that we were simply hoping for so much more? While we live in a very, very difficult and precarious time, no more so than those first followers of Jesus. They lived under a Roman occupying force. They lived in fear of the brutality of that force. There was economic uncertainty. There was stability that they questioned. And they were looking for a leader who would deliver them, who would be transformative, who would say something different than what they had heard from everyone else. But the Gospels we're hearing today, that we heard last Sunday, the story of Martha and Mary, and the week before, the Good Samaritan, were just a little too ordinary, a little too commonplace for Jesus' first hearers. Today's Gospel is almost homespun, likening the relationship between parents feeding their children to God feeding us simply lacked the grandeur. It lacked what they had hoped would be transformative. Think analogously. You're not feeling well, and you spend a lot of money to fly to the Mayo Clinic. And after a day of tests, they tell you, go home, drink plenty of liquids, get plenty of rest, and I assure you, you'll be fine. You would think to yourself, I could have come up with that diagnosis falling out of bed in the morning. I expected to hear something more. So too with the first hearers of Jesus. And this prayer, the Lord's Prayer, which is so magnificent today, was so commonplace then. How could anything extraordinary come from gospel passages which to the hearer are only ordinary? One of Pope Francis's famous favorite artists is someone by the name of Michelangelo Merisi da Caravaggio. Most of us know the name Caravaggio because his paintings are worth quite a sum of money today. But one of the interesting things about Caravaggio's art is Caravaggio was not a member of the aristocracy. He was more or less a street person, an urchin who ran from job to job. He was born during the bubonic plague. Most of his male relatives had died, and he never was really formed into adult behavior. But he had this incredible gift of art. And because he really associated with people on the streets, all of the models, all of the figures in his arts were people from the streets, very ordinary people, people with dirt under their fingernails, people who would be considered of ill repute. And he became very popular with the aristocracy, yet he didn't paint the aristocracy. The aristocracy looked at their faith through the images of ordinary people. For those of us who know some of the works of Caravaggio, the calling of St. Matthew, the tax collector, the crucifixion of St. Peter, Amor Vincit Omnia, Salome holding the head of John the Baptist, David holding the head of Goliath, the taking of the Christ, the entombment of the Christ, all of these paintings, which are now so seminal to our faith, featured the most ordinary, pedantic, pedestrian people a painter could paint. Because somehow, out of the ordinary, out of the human experience of what the Greeks would call the hoi polloi, came images of faith which were transcendent and transformative. What Jesus wants to instill in his hearers is this: don't look for magic behind the curtain. Don't look for the thunderous moment that's somehow going to split the earth in two and send all the people you hate off the earth and bind all the people you love together in power. It's going to come through such activities as ordinary as parents feeding their children. And it's going to come from prayers as regular and as simple as the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer mentioned in Luke is a little different than what we pray because we're much more accustomed to Matthew's version. The version in Matthew's Gospel is what we pray every Sunday at Mass and what many of you pray. But it really does not matter the version. What matters is that the Lord's Prayer, as ordinary as it sounds, as commonplace, as much a prayer of the hoi polloi, can be as transformative today as it was for Jesus' first hearers. Often, when somebody comes to the Sacrament of Reconciliation and receives a penance, especially if he or she feels that he or she has failed, and the penance is the Lord's Prayer, they say, "That's it? Isn't there something more? Isn't there some new-fangled prayer that will somehow plunge me into the depths of my sin?" And I think we always have to think, was not the Lord's Prayer what St. Perpetua and St. Felicity, the first martyrs, prayed when they were martyred? Is not the Lord's Prayer what St. Anthony the Hermit prayed when he and many others went to the desert to go closer to Christ? Was not the Lord's Prayer what they prayed through the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, the Renaissance, the Crusades, and all of these epochs in the Church? Was not the Lord's Prayer what the first missionaries who brought the Gospel to the New World prayed? And was it not what so many of the immigrants who came in the 20th century prayed? Was not the Lord's Prayer what our great-grandparents and grandparents prayed when they didn't know where to turn for food, for work, or for shelter? And is it not where we to this day can still turn to pray for the problems that continue to ail our world, our nation, our hearts, and our uncertainty? There is no magic we find in the Scriptures. Rather, there are legendary stories of faith that say, continue the humble, simple prayers from your youth. Continue the powerful message of the Lord's Prayer, trusting that when we are put to the test, God, who delivered everyone through salvation history, will deliver us. And that if we ask God for our daily bread and God's will to be done, God's will reign supreme.